to 10 one by one, and then we'll go through the translations as well. So number 5, text number 5. It was in your dynasty that Hiranyaksha was born, carrying only his own club. He wandered the globe alone, without assistance, to conquer all directions, and no hero he met could rival him.
Text number 6.
When delivering the earth from the Garbhodaka sea, Lord Vishnu, in his incarnation as a boar, killed Hiranyaksha, who had appeared before him. The fight was severe, and the Lord killed Hiranyaksha with great difficulty. Later, as the Lord thought about the uncommon prowess of Hiranyaksha, he felt himself victorious indeed.
Text number 7.
When Hiranyakashipu, he heard the news of his brothers being killed. With great anger, he went to the residence of Vishnu, the killer of his brother, wanting to kill Lord Vishnu.
Text number 8.
Seeing Hiranyakashipu coming forward, bearing a trident in his hand, like personified death, Lord Vishnu, the best of all mystics, the knower of the progress of time, thought as follows.
Number 9.
Wheresoever I go, Hiranyakashipu will follow me, as death follows all living entities. Therefore, it is better for me to enter the core of his heart. For then, because of his power to see only externally, he will not see me.
Text number 10. We will...
So just before I continue, there's one thing that should be offered to the Supreme Lord, Srimad Bhagavatam. We offer our prayers of respect. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada Ki. Lord Vamanadev continued, O King of the demons, after Lord Vishnu made this decision, he entered the body of his enemy Hiranyakashipu, who was running after him with great force. In a subtle body, inconceivable to Hiranyakashipu, Lord Vishnu, who was in great anxiety, entered Hiranyakashipu's nostril along with his breath. Purport. Oh, actually, we'll do word for word, we'll do phrase by phrase, if you repeat after me. Lord Vamanadev continued, O King of the demons, after Lord Vishnu made his decision, he entered the body of his enemy, Hiranyakashipu, who was running after him with great force. In a subtle body inconceivable to Hiranyakashipu, Lord Vishnu, who was in great anxiety, entered Hiranyakashipu's nostril along with his breath. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is already in the core of everyone's heart. Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hirdeshe Arjuna Tishtati.
It's Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text 61. Logically, therefore, it was not at all difficult for Lord Vishnu to enter Hiranyakashipu's body. The word vivigna jetaha, very anxious, is significant. It was not that Lord Vishnu was afraid of Hiranyakashipu. Rather, because of compassion, Lord Vishnu was in anxiety about how to act for his welfare. Om Dhyana Timarandasya Jananjana Salakaya Chakshohon Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpatrupiyascha Kripasindubhyevacha Patitanam Bhavanabhyo Vaishnavabhyo Namo Namaha. What I'd like to do is also pray to the Bhagavatam itself for its mercy. It's a nice prayer in the Padma Purana. Samsara sagre magnam dinam mam kuru niti karma grihaya kritangam mamudava bhavam aval. I have fallen into the ocean of repeated birth and death, and I am totally distressed. My karma is like crocodiles ready to bite me. O ocean of mercy, please pick me up from the ocean of material existence. Srimad Bhagavatakyayo yam pratyaksha krishnevahi sivrikrito shimayanata murtayam bhavasagare. This Srimad Bhagavatam is actually Krishna himself. O my Lord, to get released from this cycle of birth and death, I have taken shelter at your lotus feet. Manurate madayayo yam sabala savatavaya nivayakinnaiva kartavyam dashaham tava keshava. My dear Keshava, I am your servant. Please fulfill this desire of mine in serving you through the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, these special chapters, Lord Vamanadeva, his appearance, special mission, and also it's special time. It's the Christmas period, and we're on Christmas Eve, so called. But it's a commemoration day rather than the actual Vedic probably date, but still. There's certain people that appear in this world and certain avatars that they come with a special message. Certainly Lord Vamanadeva has come with a special message, and it's very wonderful in that he explains so much about Guru Tattva, and also the Tattva of the what a Brahman is and what a Vaishnava is. And so we've much to learn from this forthcoming chapter. But what I'd like to do, this is, if I can just find it, oh yes. So I'll read the two verses which first tell us about his appearance. When Aditi saw the personality of Godhead had appeared from her own womb, having accepted a transcendental body by his own spiritual potency, she was struck with wonder and very happy. Upon seeing the child, Prajapati Kasyapa exclaimed, "Jai, Jai," in great happiness and wonder. The Lord appeared in his original form with ornaments and weapons in his hands, although his ever-existing form was not visible in the material world, he nonetheless appeared in this form. Then, in the presence of his father and mother, he assumed the form of Vamana, a Brahmin dwarf, a brahmachari, just like a theatrical actor. When the Lord comes and he appears just like a theatrical actor, he takes upon a role. And actually, all living entities too, according to our desires, were born in forms. According to our desires, it's created. And so we all become actors in the material world. We're all living our roles. Somehow, we're brought together to in this huge play of material existence. It's an amazing play brought about by the Lord. It's got two themes, really. It's that of where we can worship the Lord in terms of the material energy. We can worship the material energy. In other words, the material energy starts with this body. We worship ourselves and the body and the senses and all the pleasures of the senses. We start, so it's like it's a hedonist. It's a worship of ourselves. But also this world, its real purpose is actually to realize the absolute truth, this human form especially we've been given. And so we now have the role of a human being, not an ant, not a tree. So we've got a special responsibility now to maybe revive our Krishna consciousness, as Prabhupada tells us. We have to bring back the memory of our real relationship with the Supreme. Somehow or other, we've fallen into this ocean of material existence. We've become separated. We've turned away from the Lord. And there's an opportunity by these great, by the avatars, the great souls, the great Mahajanas. They come to rescue us. They come to remind us of who we are, who we really are, and that we're not the worshippers of this body, but we're the worshippers of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is it's a wonderful introduction when they say he performs the role of a theatrical actor. Now, we in our sort of roles on this Vaidhi Bhakti, we have to also act like devotees. We have to become actors for a while until our consciousness is revived, until this bodily nature no longer possesses its power over us. The senses, they're so strong. And it's overpowering us at times, and especially at Christmas, where it causes all sorts of sinful action in the name of Christmas, you know, slaughter of so many living entities in the name of the worship of Jesus. And somehow it's a contradiction. It's supposed to be a time of peace. You can see that on at times of battles and so many things in the past, somehow the enemies have got together and celebrated Christmas, the arriving of Jesus. But somehow it's a battle now between materialism and the spiritual, this Christmas. And I don't know if anybody knows, but who's in household life, but is there a film being shown about Jesus? I don't know. I remember just before I left household life, I was really, you know, becoming quite frustrated by it. actually, but there were no films of Jesus. It was all Batman and Star Wars and things like this, you know. So it was home entertainment rather than some spiritual nourishment. So it tended to lost its flavor on its real truth. So then what is wonderful too is that I've gone through maybe the parts leading up to this, and if I can find my little crib sheet here, I want to read through some of the verses previous to this, and it's in the previous chapter, and it talks about the Lord's appearance before the sacrificial arena. So, I'm just going to read chapter 18, text 20 to 32. But it's going to be like a story, I suppose, really. Like, Christmas time is also a time for stories. You know, they read the nativity, you know, almost as a story. But, if I can just find the first verse. So, now Bali Maharaj had offered glorification to Lord Vamanadeva when he appeared at this arena. And he recognized that he should actually worship the Brahmins. But of course, Vamanadeva came in such a way that he attracted their attention of all the great sages there as well, with his effulgence. When the Lord heard that Bali Maharaj was performing the Ashvamedha sacrifices under the patronage of the Brahmanas belonging to the Bhrigu dynasty, the Supreme Lord, who is full in every respect, proceeded to show his mercy to Bali Maharaj. By his weight, he pushed down on the earth at every step. This is very interesting, because he was only small, and yet this indicates the power of Vamanadeva. He pushed down on this earth. Shishi Radha Gokul Nanda Ki Jai, Shishi Gornitai Ki Jai, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. So then he proceeds, while engaged in performing the sacrifice in the field known as Bhrighu Kacha, on the northern bank of the Namada River, the Brahminical priests, the descendants of Bhrighu, saw Vamanadeva to be like the sun rising nearby. O King, because of Vamanadeva's bright effulgence, the priests, along with Bali Maharaj and all the members of the assembly, were robbed of their splendor. Thus they began to ask one another whether the sun god himself, Sanat Kumar, or fire god, or had come personally to see the sacrificial ceremony. While the priests of Bhrighu dynasty and their disciples talked and argued in various ways, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vamanadeva, holding in his hands a rod, the umbrella, a water pot full of water, entered the arena of the Ashvamedha sacrifice. Appearing as a Brahmana boy, wearing a belt of straw, a sacred thread, upper garment, deer skin, and matted locks of hair, Lord Vamanadeva entered the arena of sacrifice. His brilliant effulgence diminished the brilliance of the priests and their disciples, and thus stood from who thus stood from their seats and welcomed the Lord properly by offering obeisances. Bali Maharaj, jubilant at seeing Lord Vamanadeva, whose beautiful limbs contributed equally to his beauty of the entire body, offered him a seat with great satisfaction, thus offering the proper reception to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is always beautiful to the liberated souls. Bali Maharaj worshipped him by washing his lotus feet. Lord Shiva, the best of demigods, who carries on his forehead the emblem of the moon that was received on his head with great devotion from the Ganges water emanating from the toe of Lord Vishnu, being aware of religious principles, Bali Maharaj knew this, consequently following in the footsteps of Lord Shiva, he placed on his head the water that had washed the feet, the Lord's lotus feet. Bali Maharaj then said to Lord Vamanadeva, "O Brahmana, I offer you my hearty welcome and my sacrifice, my respectful obeisances. Please let us know what we may do for you. We think of you as the personified austerity of the great Brahmana sages. O my Lord, because you have kindly arrived at our home, all my forefathers are satisfied. Our family and entire dynasty have now been sanctified, and the sacrifices we are performing is now complete because of your presence. O son of a Brahmana, today the fire of sacrifice is ablaze according to the injunction of Shastra, and I have been freed from all sinful reactions of my life by the water that has washed your feet. O my Lord, by the touch of your small lotus feet, with the entire surface of the world has been sanctified." So it says, "O son of a Brahmana, it appears then you have come here to ask for something. Therefore, whatever you want, you may take from me. O best of those who are worshipable, you may take from me a cowl, gold, furnished home, palatable food, drink, daughter of a Brahmin for your wife, prosperous villages, horses, elephants, chariots, and whatever you desire." So, this is interesting. So the concept of valuable things is given there. You know, a wife, land, so many objects. But then, in this wonderful follow-up chapter here, in chapter 19, it says that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vamanadeva, heard Bali Maharaj speaking in this pleasing way. He was very satisfied, for Bali Maharaj had spoken on religious principles. Thus, he began to praise him in return. So, the Lord then began to glorify Bali Maharaj. And so, the wonderful thing is about the nature of the soul, that this glorification elevates the soul. Or, not elevates, but it revives the soul's nature, real nature. In this world, the soul, covered with a material body, you know, it's been polluted. And we can see that in day-to-day life, actually, what the news is, or what the news is in the office, or wherever you go, somehow is tainted, because it's influenced by the darkness of envy. How people criticize each other, they find fault. This is, goes completely against the nature of the soul, actually. If we find fault in each other, then we go against the nature of the soul. There may be fault in us, but if we find fault, then we should know, then we've been somehow being captured by this bodily and its bodily nature and its perception under the modes of nature, goodness, passion and ignorance. So our vision is not clear. So we're given instructions. Don't criticize. Don't find fault. This will lead us to chanting the holy name, because the holy name is a request to say, please accept me. We somehow violated the laws of our own real nature and gone against the Lord. And we've gone against our own nature. We can't be this joyous person. You know, the soul, the bliss, that we're an expand or a particle of the Supreme Lord Himself. That we are eternal in our nature. And the Lord, actually, He's so wonderful. He's always blissful. Why is He always blissful? Because He's serving. He's serving every living entity, all His parts and parcels. He's serving in a way, this creation in such a way that He's maintaining it. And yet, somehow or other, we've turned away from Him. We've not appreciated this. And you can have this in family life too, the appreciation of the parental service is not always appreciated by the children, because they stamp their feet when they don't get what they want. And but they see somehow the worship of God has somehow been taken in, is the like a parent, that you ask for what you want, not for who you are, which is very sad. Because what you want is usually under the bodily nature. But if you ask for who you are, who am I, what am I doing, what, you know, how can I serve you, how can I please you, then we can find out who we are. So we need a present, we need the real Christmas present of finding out who we are, not what our body wants. Christmas is such a time where we can be deceived by our own bodily desires. You know, whether it be through intoxication, sex parties, all these discos, you know, turkeys, all the violation of the principles of our true nature. So how can we be happy at a time which does all these sinful activities? It's very sad that somehow Christmas has now become a time of source of sinful activity. The motive is that somehow if I give you a present, you give me one in return. And if we haven't given one, we feel guilty. But actually, the whole idea of giving is a continuous process, a daily process that we should embark upon, not just at Christmas. It's one of the nature of bhakti, the nature of the soul. It's pure giving. And so this time of Christmas should be the nature of the soul. You know, much like if any of you have not heard this Christmas carol or this by Charles Dickens, Scrooge. He was a miser. He didn't want to give anything. He did give the minimum wage. He didn't give presents out at Christmas. He said, look, you must be very careful with money. He had this business. And he was visited by his old partner from the death, a ghost of his old partner, Jacob Marley. And he was reminded, he said, and he was horrified to see the state of this ghost, bound by books and money and chains of this material existence. Such a story. And he became fearful. But he says, and Jacob Marley says, look, you were my friend, but now I can be a friend to you. This is what you're going to be like. And he became fearful. And so it was a very nice story, but it came when he saw this possibility of what was happening in the past, what was going to happen in the present. He saw all these people he knew and their suffering, but also saw their humanity, how they were giving to each other, how they were trying to give to each other, not on a material level, but on a personal level, their love, loving exchanges. And it was at that point somehow a tear came in his eye. He also remembered his own past, his own close relationship with somebody. But somehow or other, because of his nature, he found his worship of his God, work, gold, his job, took over. So, very interesting situation. And then he saw future. He saw his own tombstone. And he saw these people standing at this tombstone that all they could say is they felt sorry for him and his existence. And that's what it meant to him. And that's what it meant to them. You know, that his existence had no purpose except himself. Very sad. And it was at this point, obviously, when you realize you're a bit selfish, as we start to realize through Prabhupada, our selfish nature has been caused by this body and its selfish nature, its senses, that somehow maybe there's a little bit more to life. And we start to learn from Prabhupada that actually it is in giving that we receive. You know, that's from the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi. And that our real joy lies in giving unconditionally and fulfilling this nature of the soul, which is this loving capacity to give it of itself with wanting nothing in return. And the example being giving of a loving mother, that the welfare of the child is worth all the austerity and difficulties that the mother or the parent, the father, may go through, because it is the welfare of that child is of a prime importance rather than ourselves. So, in a way, it's a sort of little lesson that we're given in this world, that somehow when we get married and there's expansions which come from the Lord himself, that we have to sacrifice. Sacrifice means our selfish ideas, our selfish motives for somebody else. So it's a sort of a training ground. But still somehow or other in the material existence is getting twisted. Somehow the parents have got to go out and they got to get a babysitter for their children because they want to go out and enjoy. Or they're hard at work and they're ambitious. They never see their children. So there's no relationship. So, but at the time of death, these things are realized. And so death means this is when you see our nature. We see those things that we regret, those things that we haven't done in our loving exchanges. We see what we're given reality. You know, much like Scrooge. So, life is meant for bhakti yoga, self-realization. And above all, the relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This message of Lord Chaitanya. This love in separation. And so, in practicing this bhakti yoga, in conjunction with devotees, with the association of devotees, then we can start to realize that maybe it's better to give. But it's a very tough process. But it's made easy by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. And what is also nice from this purport, that it expressed that the anxiety of the Lord when Hiranyakashipu was chasing for him was not in fear of him. He wasn't hiding from him in fear, but he was hiding from him in anxiety. He wanted to know how he could help this Hiranyakashipu, this demon. This is the nature of the Lord. Somebody who wants to kill you, are you looking for their welfare? This is an amazing thing, this Bhagavatam. It's telling us so many things, you know, about spiritual nature. That how somehow or other we can feel for those who even want to kill us. As Jesus did. Also, he had great compassion. Forgive them, for they know not what they do. Such great souls. You know, they come into this world. And I was speaking to a taxi driver, came back from the Isle of Wight, seeing the children of the family. And he was speaking. He was Muslim. We just started talking. And he says, they're doing, these people, these fanatics, these killers, they're doing so much in the name of religion. They're killing. They call it jihad, he said. This is not the meaning of jihad. Jihad means struggle. He says, my jihad every day is to do this job of taxi driving, to get a fare, to somehow protect my family, to somehow look after them, somehow give them the things that they need. But also, it's the struggle for my own spirituality, he says. My real nature. Against the nature of this world and its lies. Very interesting conversation. So jihad means struggle. But if we, by our nature or our modes of nature, we misinterpret this message, like these killers, then we lose. You know, we can interpret these scriptures to suit our own needs. This is self-deception. It's not self-realization. And so we have to be very careful that the modes of nature, they're a bit strong. This is not going how I want, so I'm going to see it this way. Order the spiritual master. Oh, my spiritual master says I've got to look after my health. It doesn't mean not do service. It means to look after your spiritual health and your physical health. They can be hand in hand. It doesn't mean avoid. It means Krishna is my protector in all circumstances. But sometimes we are asked to do things that are difficult. And somehow we may suffer because it's cold outside. But this is the message of book distribution, isn't it? It's really tough. But it's a sacrifice. It's such a special service. We should understand that. So nothing can be, that good can come out of anything unless there's sacrifice, actually. And it says in chapter 3 of the Bhagavad Gita, the message is there. Happiness and knowledge, they come from sacrifice. It's the only way. So, this is the message of Bhagavatam. It's give your love as a sacrifice. Whatever you can do for the Supreme Lord, you know, you'll feel happy. That's the present of the Lord. He'll give you happiness. And you'll realize your true nature, whether it be in this world or in the next world. Both are there. Happiness in this world, in devotional life, is there. There's no doubt about it. Even in austerity of the body, it's there to be realized, as Prabhupada realized. He was completely happy. But he was somehow also struggling within a material body like us. He had to sacrifice and suffer for us, which he did. An amazing sacrifice. He's so special. So I think I better finish there. There's a lot in this thing, because we're going to find out about Guru, and we're going to find out about Brahmins and our relationships, and how to understand what is our service, how it should be played out, and who is not Guru, who is Guru. So it's a very wonderful chapter. Thank you. So any comments, questions?